Chapter 10. Yellow Snake was a debt collector, one of the more junior of the Second Circle functions. He visited the legitimate businesses in strict rotation, making sure they paid, checking their profits, checking nothing was being hidden from them, meting out punishment if things didn't come up to scratch. That was where an operative learnt their trade. If they were good, they'd progress to bigger things. They'd come off the streets entirely, start getting others to do the rounds, maybe even find a way into the First Circle, where the real decisions were made. He'd been picked up during one of the first of Vongello's wave of raids. Lucky, perhaps, not to have been killed among all the flying bullets, though Zidorov guessed he wasn't feeling so lucky now. On his return from the raid, Zidorov took his time. He went to his cell and checked for any urgent messages. There was one from Lena Vestiva, which he didn't read. There were a few bits and pieces coming in for the Tereshova case, but nothing yet from Kuo. There were assorted leads and complaints and requests for assistance from other enforcers. He replied to some of those, deferred others, junked a few. He went and poured himself some caffeine and grabbed something to eat. He felt musty and unclean, but didn't fancy using the pulse showers in the department. He'd wait until he got back to his hab. He wondered if Malija was feeling better disposed by now. It would make life easier if she were. Naxi would be home soon. That would be a reckoning of a sort, one way or another. It was all giving him a headache. He ate badly, all refined sucrose, processed carbs. He felt aches all the time, and not just from that scar. He liked the pain from that scar. It was like a friend, an annoying friend, but one who you'd miss if he went away. Eventually, he ambled down to the holding cells. To get there, you had to descend 3 levels and then walk through the Chasiner's domain. Even the air felt caustic down there. No one liked lingering in those corridors, with the stains that somehow resisted every attempt to bleach them out, and the cries that echoed from the barred, windowless chambers. If you passed a Chasiner in the corridor, one of those wearing the long black coat with the emotion suppressor coil at the nape of their neck, you didn't salute or give the his hand greeting. You kept your head down. You kept on walking. Past the windowless cells were the regular holding cells. They'd been positioned so that occupants would hear plenty of what was going on above them. They acted as a softener all of its own. Zidorov had come down there sometimes, opened a door, only to find an inmate begging to talk. Once or twice, if the duty guards had been careless, they'd already cut their wrists. That made everyone angry. A waste of time and resources. Yellow Snake would not be like that, of course. The Vedora had their pride. Zidorov had ordered him to be taken to an interrogation room. A bare cell, one table, 3 chairs, stark lighting, 2 messages from the Ministerium Oversight Committee painted high up near the ceiling in big letters. No wretch so degraded to be beyond his mercy. And better to confess guilt than lose your soul. It was debatable how effective those messages were. Many of the occupants of the cells weren't much bothered with talk of souls. Plenty of them couldn't read in the first place. Zidorov reached the door to the cell and pressed his finger up against the blood cycler. The lumen blinked on, and the door slid open. He went in, sat down, took out a data slate, placed it on the table in front of him. The door closed behind him with a heavy clunk. Yellow Snake sat facing him, dressed in the clothes he'd been wearing when the raid took place, a loose shirt, tight trousers, a fabric band across his forehead. He was wiry lean, like a stray dog. His face was narrow. His skin a light brown, just like Zidorov's. His reactive tattoos were visible under the lumens, which had been calibrated to pick them out. His exposed skin, face, neck, forearms, showed heavy bruising. An ugly, mottled weal ran down the length of his cheek, the mark of a maul strike. Some of that might have taken place during the raid, some of it probably during custody. "So what the fuck is this?" he asked, his voice both weary and disdainful. Zidorov looked up from the data slate. "I'll ask the questions," he said, sliding it onto one. "I'll ask the questions," he said, sliding it to one side. He leaned forward, resting his elbows on the tabletop. Yellow Snake stayed where he was. The adamantium manacles at his wrists and ankles had that effect on a subject. "I've been looking for a man, Adierd Tereshova. Heard of him?" Yellow Snake's eyes narrowed. "No." "Are you sure? Think about it for a moment. We've got plenty of time." He thought about it for a moment. "No." He was running the Gargoza import station, part-time, I guess, when he could be bothered. I'm sure you would have met him there when you did your rounds.
No idea, Zidorov sighed.
Look, now I'm one of the nice ones here. You got lucky. Keep this up, I'll send you upstairs for a while and then we'll start again. And you look quite handy, which is a problem because they take that as a professional challenge.
Yellowsnake didn't look fazed.
I can't help you.
See, you weren't picked up because of this. Help me out, and you'll be back out in a few hours. I just need to talk to you about Adier Tereshova. He's missing, and I'd like to find him. When did you last see him?
Yellowsnake thought for a moment. Zidorov could see him weighing up what to do. Eventually, he shrugged.
Almost a month ago. We had a business meeting.
At the station?
Yes.
And that was where you had all your meetings?
Yes.
What was the nature of the business you discussed?
Import-export.
Zidorov chuckled darkly.
It was always import-export.
Did he ever express dissatisfaction with the terms of your business arrangement?
No.
Did you have any other disagreements? Did he behave unusually?
No.
So you have no idea why he might have disappeared shortly afterwards?
None at all.
Zidorov reached up to scratch the back of his neck. It was kept cold in the chamber. At least it kept him awake.
From what I know of Adierd, he had ambition, if not much sense. I think he'd have found working at a station like Gargoza rather boring.
I think he might have wanted to try new things.
So I wondered what you might do, say, if he expressed an interest in playing a larger part in your operation.
Not just paying the bills, maybe collecting a few too.
Yellowsnake looked at Zidorov flatly.
What attraction would that hold for us?
I don't know. I'm not in import-export.
Slate, maybe? He had access to lots of it.
So do we.
He has a big name.
Not an advantage in our line of work.
So you didn't pursue anything like that? He wasn't trying to partner with you?
Yellowsnake smiled coldly.
We don't need partners.
I think he did, though.
I think he spotted an opportunity for something more glamorous, much more lucrative, like cell draining, for example.
Zidorov watched carefully as he spoke, looking for anything, an eyelid flicker, the twitch of a finger.
Yellowsnake was too good for that.
But that's not legal, probator.
No, it isn't. So if I had footage of a storage chamber, a verifiable footage, showing illicit Medicaid activity going on in a location where we know the Yizan cell had operations, you'd be shocked?
I'd be very shocked. But if you mean the place I think you might mean, there's nothing there. Nothing at all. So you're wrong about that.
Strange, isn't it, to own an empty storage facility?
Yellowsnake looked equivocal.
Not really. Things get moved around. Facilities change. That's the nature of the business.
Not any more. There's been a shutdown.
I noticed. So is that what this is all about, this Tereshova boy?
Not really. Your people shot a sanctioner, wounded a probator. Castellan's laying down a marker.
For the first time, Yellowsnake looked a little caught off guard.
I don't know anything about that.
Are you sure? If you did, it might get you out of a whole lot of trouble.
Where'd it happen?
Up in the suborbitals. Think a bit harder. Someone's got twitchy, and it's landed you all in a heap of trouble.
For the second time, Yellowsnake did as he was asked, and did think a bit harder.
Zidorov let him. He knew he'd be assessing a number of things. How likely it was he'd be shunted up to the Chasteners. How likely it was he could hold out there for long.
Whether he had anything to trade, anything that could extract him without violating the Garn prohibition on substantive snitching. Eventually he took a weary breath.
Look, this is what I can give you. I got nothing on those shootings. We made a mistake or you made a mistake. Either way, you'll be getting a call from Yuti soon. But the boy, I don't know. He did want to try his hand, but he said he did have Slate. But it wasn't my area of expertise. All I did was tell him where to go, who to speak to. I don't know if he did. Maybe he got into something he couldn't handle. But if you ask me, that's not likely. He was flash. He was stupid. And we don't work with stupid. So I really don't know. I think you need to look elsewhere. That's your job.
Zidorov noted it down.
Who did you send him to?
The sector first, Silka. But she'll be long underground now, unless you already have her. Like all the first, that's what happens when you send your dogs in.
I'll look into it.
Yellowsnake smiled.
Don't think it'll do you much good.
Zidorov snapped the data slate off and stood.
We'll see, won't we? You just keep on running. We'll keep on finding you.
But he was right, of course. Silka, the Vedora First Circle operative Yellowsnake mentioned, was out of reach, at least for the time being. The entire organisation had gone to ground, shuttering up known safe houses, running for the underhab levels where it took a long time to find anything and anyone, pulling out of even the most lucrative shakedowns while the storm raged. Von Geller had hit them hard, and it was costing them, but there was a price for that. The head of the Yorgayina branch, the man known as UT-1, was similarly out of reach, as were his lieutenants. Mauls could always clear out the rubbish at the bottom of the pile, as they did from time to time, but the brains were harder to get at. Zidorov put in a request to bring Silka in, knowing that it would languish a long way down the queue. His best hope was that Von Geller wanted the Tereshova business concluded quickly and might be able to speed things up, but he didn't place any store by it. His mood got worse. He ate again, knowing that it was a bad move. He felt as if the whole thing had become a weight around his neck, one that got in the way of the things he ought to be doing. If he'd had a free hand, he'd have been in more holding cells with more Vedora, getting to the bottom of where all that cell-draining equipment had been taken to. That was the important thing, the thing he'd really like to smash. Since the raid, however, it had been made clear to him that the hunt for the spoilt little rich boy was the priority, as well as restoring the balance they all professed to care about. And on Eddie Ed, too, Yellowsnake was likely to be right. It was hard to see why the Vedora would have wanted him to be a part of their activities, nor why they would have kidnapped or killed him if things had got ugly. Either way, it would have risked bringing unwelcome attention to them for little gain. The old nagging thought returned that this was a sham, that Adiaid was alive and well, and that Udmil had been playing them from the start for some reason that was still unclear. The wise thing to have done would have been to keep diligently digging, keep playing the part, but Zidorov didn't feel wise. He felt stretched out and irritable. He tried to put a call into Udmil direct and failed. He tried to get through to the main Tereshova Combine inquiry desk and got nowhere. He tried to call up the Combine's liaison agents, the ones who handled the transfer of funds to the sanctioners, and was given the brush-off. That made him even more irritable, so he went to his desk and tapped up Glovak, the head of the Slake Crime Division, the one responsible for keeping tabs on all the big legitimate corporations. He was as corrupt as they came, something that went with the territory, but an affable soul and usually helpful. He could afford to be with the slate he made. His staff kept tabs on the movements of most of the players, something that had made him useful before more than once.
Zido,
came his voice over the iris. It sounded like he was outside. It sounded like there were waves breaking.
Are you at the beach? Zidorov asked. Just a little recreation,
Glovak replied smugly.
Invitation from the Jash Corps. Smoothed the ways.
Zidorov bet that it did. Smoothed his personal account too, most likely.
Just how much slate are Jash splashing away these days? More than you'll ever see.
Thanks for reminding me.
Listen, I've got to speak to Udmil Tereshova. Her people tell me she's busy, but I need to speak to her now. Any help? Hang on.
Glovak cut the link, checking his private veil of contact and intelligence scripts. It took a few moments while Zidorov drummed his fingers impatiently.
No good, I'm afraid, came Glovak's voice eventually. I've got nothing. But Mordak, the husband, we know he's due to chair a convention up in the guilt zone. I can give you a lock, Ref, but it'll mean he'll be present at his private apartment for a few hours. He always stays there ahead of one of these.
Thanks a lot. How's the weather up there?
Still hasn't rained, which is lucky for me. Consider it done.
A few minutes later, Zidorov felt the coordinates pulse into his receptor. By then, he was already on the way to the Luxor, keeping his head down, hoping not to bump into Vastiva or Draj or any of the dozens of sanctioners pulled into the purge against the Vedora. A lot of them blamed him for the disruption and would have happily seen him and Borodina trade places. The drive was not a long one. Bastion U was placed fairly centrally, and the richer commercial districts were sited just to the north of it. These were the guilt zones.
the places where the gilded made their money and struck their deals. The spires, not towers, spires, were taller, more ornate, clad in granite and fine firestone, and finished with basalt imperial aquilas and coiled varigantuous serpents. Covered viaducts connected each individual pinnacle, branching out between the mighty struts like the spokes of a web, making it possible for a servitor inside to trundle between every one of them without ever touching the ground. Brecht had told him once that it reminded him of a heart he'd seen cut open on an autopsy table, with its gaping ventricles and stringy connecting tissue. Looking at it now, Zhidarov couldn't see the similarity. The gilt zones had always looked to him like a cemetery, a vast collection of dead stone monuments, each one casting a shadow the length of a habclave, choking the life out of the earth below. He swept the Luxor up to one of the larger buildings, an octagonal spire that surged up from a tangle of access viaducts and then rose in steadily, contracting tiers into a blustery sky. Flurries of rain gusted at him as he got out and made his way to one of several dozen entrance lobbies. This one had the highest profile, boasting marble walls and a polished floor. Plants, probably real, possibly fake, stood in gold pots outside. When the armour glass doors slid open, more planters were revealed, festooned with exotic flowers that looked far too healthy to be natural. Men and women in plush robes glided around the interior, or stood in huddles, or gave instructions to menials in similarly plush tabards and jerkins. A few servitors lingered at the margins, luggage haulers mostly, though even these looked less wretched than the common run. The mirror-visored security guards prowled in pairs through the crowds, cradling autoguns. A long reception desk stood at the far side of the chamber, crewed by implausibly young-looking staff, but Zhidarov ignored that and made his way straight to the row of elevators. As he neared them, one of the ever-present guards blocked his path. "Can I help you, citizen?" he asked, staring at Zidorov's less-than-gilded appearance. Zhidarov flashed his hollow seal. "Probator Bastian Yu," he said. "How's it going?" The guard relaxed. "All is well, probator. Can I ask your business here? I'll have to register it." "What's your duty, ident officer?" Zhidarov asked. 5569. Zhidarov activated a credit transfer. "Just a little something for you. Go out for dinner. Enjoy yourself. But see, I've really got to be moving." The guard checked his slate balance, then nodded. "All seems to be in order, probator," he said. "I'll be heading to floor 465. "His hand, probator." "His hand, officer." And from then on it was easy. The floors skidded past, the elevator shuddered to a halt, the doors opened, he went down the corridors, walking confidently, attracting attention from none of the many guards he passed on the way. The rooms up in the high floors were, if anything, more expensively appointed than those below. Every surface was hard and reflective. The air felt cleaner, scrubbed several times before being piped through the interior spaces. It smelt vaguely of crushed petals. After walking across a wide lobby with a crimson velvety carpet, he reached an archway bearing the Tereshova crest. Four figures stood under that archway, clad in dark red armour and closed-faced helmets, all carrying mauls and stun pistols. Their livery was different to those in the lobby on the ground floor, and Zhidarov guessed they weren't under the same set of obligations. Still, he was where he needed to be. Through the arch he could see more carpet, more doors, more sets of real-looking foliage. "Lost citizen," said the lead guard. They had to be polite up here. Zhidarov could easily have been someone very important, despite appearances. Few ordinary mortals would ever have got this far. He opened up his hollow seal for a second time. I have an appointment with Ser Tereshova, Probator Zhidarov, Bastian Yu." The guard looked doubtful. Zhidarov noticed then that one of his hands was an augmetic replacement. It was covered in a glove, but metal glinted at the wrist. It looked nasty. He wondered what it could do. "He's in close counsel," Metal Hand said. "He won't be seeing anyone." "He'll see me," said Zhidarov. "Just let him know I'm here. Augusto Zhidarov, missing persons." For a moment it looked like Metal Hand would hold out, but then he inclined his helmet, and something was clearly sent over a private comm circuit. A moment later, and the guard stood down. This way, please, probator." Metal Hand led him under the archway and down the corridor beyond. The carpet was astonishing, a pile that felt as thick as a side of grox meat, one that his boots just sank into, reaching up all the way over his soles. They reached a pair of double doors at the end. A metal hand activated a chime. The doors swung open to reveal a chamber that could have comfortably housed a couple of the Bastion's turbine gunships. The furniture was extensive. Settles, armchairs, low tables bearing bowls of fruit, which looked very much like it might be non-synthetic, all sitting on top of more thick-piled rugs scattered across a semi-reflective wooden floor. Near the far end was a curved conference table with seats for 20. Six figures sat around it, three physically present, three ghostly hololithic projections. There was no mistaking the chairman. Zidorov recognised Mordak Tereshova from the Picts Udmil had given him. He was a big man, a tall man, with a long black beard that spilled halfway down his chest. His skin was white, like the fat on uncooked meat. He wore a blue-black half-coat over a black shirt. Every finger on his hand had a ring on it. As Zidorov neared the table, Mordak said something to those gathered around him. The hololiths flickered out of existence. The three physical attendees rose, bowed, then withdrew through doors set in the far wall. Metal Hand withdrew in turn, walking all the way back across the chamber and closing the double doors behind him on his way out. After that, Zidorov and Mordak were alone, in a room that could have hosted a few hundred and still not look cramped. Mordak went over to a drinks cabinet and poured himself a glass of opal wine.
"A drink, Prebeta?" he asked.
He was on duty, so no.
A Retsi, if you have it," Zidorov said.
Mordak reached for a crystal tumbler, clattered some ice into it, then poured the Retsi from a squat bottle. Zidorov took it and they chinked glasses.
"Your health," said Mordak. "How goes the investigation?"
Nice of you to ask. I'd begun to wonder if anyone cared."
Mordak raised an eyebrow and guided him to a low armchair.
"A strange thing to say."
"Is it?" Zidorov said, sitting down. "I can't get a meeting with your wife. I can't get a meeting with you. I'm investigating your son's disappearance, so that's what I call strange."
Mordak settled down opposite him.
"We're busy people. Some things can't be postponed."
"Well, like what?"
Mordak shot him a dark look.
"Are you tired, Probator? You seem distracted."
Yes, he was tired. Yes, he was distracted.
"This is how I see it," he said.
He took a long draught of the Retsi, then another one.
"I was asked to take this case on. I make inquiries, I make some progress. The days pass by. I'd have expected, I think, your wife to contact me, or you, to find out how things were going."
"I think Udmil and I expected to have updates once you'd discovered something concrete."
"Fine." Another swig. "So here it is. There's no sign of him. No one I spoke to gave me anything. He was there, and now he's not. I had some ideas which I looked into, but they're not delivering much, and so I'm forced into considering some unwelcome possibilities."
"Oh?"
Zidorov took another sip. He looked at Mordak. Mordak looked back at him. The man had a stone-hard stare. It was the kind of stare that was no doubt useful in negotiations, the kind of look that told an interlocutor that he had more money than there were jewels in the Emperor's golden throne, and that if he had to, he'd use it to drain you and everything you cared about clean of life and hope until he'd got what he wanted, and, when all that was done, he'd hardly have noticed the loss.
"I'm not sure he's missing," Zidorov said.
The room fell into silence. After an uncomfortable moment, Mordak took a small sip of his own drink.
"An absurd suggestion. You'd better tell me, Probator, what makes you offer it?"
"My gut. As you can see, it's a significant one."
Mordak didn't smile.
"So you think that this is all some kind of game?"
"Not a very good one. See, no one cares. No one is the slightest bit concerned. And as I said to your wife when we met, your outfit could buy more muscle in a few hours than my department could give you over a month. I checked it out. You haven't. You're relying on me. A lone probator in an overstretched department when your operation doesn't even take its pipe water from the city supply. That, and the fact that your son's tracks have disappeared so completely, with so little fuss or explanation, makes me wonder if you really want him to be found."
"I see."
Mordak's voice was low, soft, with a gravelly undertow.
He held himself precisely. In some ways he resembled Udmil, though he gave off a more palpable air of physical danger. For some reason those damned rings on his fingers made him scarier, as if they held some dark powers of their own, welded into the metal. Zidorov finished his drink and put it down on the table in front of him. He didn't know if anything he just said was really true, but something had felt wrong about this from the start, and it was better to flush this kind of thing out as soon as possible. If Mordak flew into a rage, he might learn something. If he started to protest his innocence, he might learn something. If he drew a weapon, then he'd have a problem. Eventually Mordak rose and walked over to a long sideboard set alongside the conference table. As he neared it, he activated a repulsor field key, and the entire unit glittered as the field was withdrawn. He tapped the surface, and a panel withdrew smoothly, revealing an elegant strongbox. Mordak placed two fingers of his right hand on the strongbox access panel, and a drawer slid out. He took something out of the drawer, then restored it all, including the repulsor field. He walked back over to Zidorov, carrying what looked like a small bundle of black velvet. He gave it to Zidorov, then took his seat again. "Have a look," he said, sipping his own drink. Zidorov unwrapped the parcel. At the centre of the velvet was a slim stasis chamber with a transparent lid. Within the chamber, he could clearly see a human finger, severed below the second joint. It was well preserved. He looked up at Mordak. "Is this what I..." "You can open it. If you do so, either here or at your headquarters, you will see that it is Adiad's. They chose the right finger. This one contains his biosignature implant. The implant is the finest quality, completely tamper-proof. Let me assure you, Probator, that this is no game." Zidorov stared at it for a while. "When did this come to you?"
"Yesterday."
"You didn't think to contact me?"
"I wished to make sure it was genuine, and then to inform his mother. She still does not know. You see, we are busy people. Even I, her husband, cannot always reach her just when I wish to."
Zidorov turned the chamber over in his hand. It was a specialist piece, not something that many could get hold of easily. "Did it come with a message?"
"An Ordex, deleted after first broadcast. It warned us not to interfere any further into activities where we do not belong."
"What activities might those be?"
"I have no idea, Probator. The Combine is active in hundreds of businesses. I have ordered a review of anything that might be contentious. We will not be paralysed by this, but we must be cautious."
Zidorov sighed heavily. "I'll take it with me. Something might have been left for us, a biosign, a field resonance. We can at least verify the owner of the, appendage."
"Oh,
there's no doubt over that," said Mordak grimly. He sat forward, placing his elbows on his knees. The rings glinted.
"As I told you, it is Adiad's. And perhaps now you can see that your fanciful ideas about the veracity of this case have no foundation. Let me tell you, it was Udmil who convinced me to go to the Bastion. She argued that it would be better for the investigation to come from a neutral party, since we could not be sure that this business was not connected to one of our rivals. We have spies in their corporations, they have spies in ours. Better, she told me, to go to the law. They would be able to provide us with a professional, one who would look into this carefully, quietly, impartially, before things got out of hand." Mordak's gaze was surprisingly hard to meet. There was an emptiness behind his eyes that was disconcerting, uncomfortable. Or maybe it was just Zidorov's embarrassment doing that for him. This thing had, so far, felt like a litany of very public failure.
You make your point," Zidorov said.
"Perhaps we do not deal with this in the way you are used to," Mordak said. "Perhaps you wish us to break down in tears and beg you to do something, anything to bring him back. Maybe we strike you as cold and unfeeling. All of this is a consequence of my profession, a consequence of what I have had to become. Believe me, I love my son. Everything I have done here, everything I have suffered, has been for him. He will take it on when I am gone. So, I tell you this truly, I wish him to be found. I wish those who have taken him to be punished. And so, Probator, as you have tracked me down with such ease, perhaps you might tell me what progress you have made and how close you are to finding him."
Either that was genuine, or Mordak was a very good actor.
Just as before, with Udmil, Zidorov felt the sincerity in the words. Just as before, he felt the wrongness under them. And yet the severed finger was there in front of him. It would be checked out, and he had no reason to believe that it wasn't Adierd's. Sending a message in that way was classic Vedora, just as it was classic behaviour from any of a dozen other criminal gangs, maybe even trade houses. My current line of inquiry concerns relations your son may have taken up with certain protection organisations, he said, going carefully. He may have come into contact with them while working for you in Gargoza. If he did and became involved with them in some way, that might have drawn him into trouble. Mordak looked unconvinced. So you're pursuing that? It's where I'm looking. We have a lot of resource on this right now. It's not an easy route, but we do have some leads.
They're dangerous people.
Very much so.
He wasn't perfect, not perfect at all, but I find that hard to believe.
It's just a line of inquiry.
Do you have any others?
Some of his contacts are proving hard to trace. I was given a name, Irina, or possibly Eruna, an acquaintance of Adiad's. Perhaps you might know of her?
Never heard the name.
Well, we'll keep looking. And the sanctioner patrols have his description. For now, that's where we are.
Not very far.
It's a big city.
And full of deceitful games.
Yes, you've made your point. This isn't one of them, but I had
to check. Well, now you have. I think that means we've said all we need to now. You'll be keen to get back out there.
Zidorov smiled dryly and got to his feet. Thanks for the drink.
A pleasure. Next time I offer you one, make sure you have something to give me in return.